Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland podcast. And we have a very good one today. Last week, we decided to postpone our goal over-unders for the second half of the season. We're going to make up for that today. Alex and I will go through them, all the top teams. We're going to talk about Vlahovic's future right before game picks with our dear friend Thousand Names. Of course, we have some games and Serie A this weekend. We'll do a special part of the pod just for our patrons, and then we'll close with an excellent interview available to all with our friend Fulvio Santucci on Inter, and we'll hear his side of what happened in Milan Spezia. But I promise that next week we'll hear a Milan perspective on that. But before we get to all that, I'm excited. Alex and I always love doing goal over under. So what we'll do is we're going to go over all the top teams. We're going to go over the main strikers. In some cases, we'll go over two players. We'll go over how many games are left. We'll set the over under. Alex and I will make our picks. You guys listening can do them. And then we can see at the end of the season who did this best. So Alex, are you ready? And we're going to start with Inter without Lukaku in the mix there. So I hope you're ready. So let's start with Inter. They have 17 games to go. So far this season, Lautaro Martinez has 11 goals. So I'm going to set his total over-under for the season at 17.5. So for him to go over, he needs to score 7 more goals in these 17 matches, Alex. So are you going to take the over or the under for Lautaro?
Well, I'm feeling very spiteful, David, after Lukaku's comments. And I really want to just say that now Lautaro is going to really gas himself up too much because Lukaku clearly prefers him to any Chelsea teammate. But I don't know. I feel like that definitely can happen and probably will happen. I don't see him hitting 20 goals a season. Like, I just don't think he's there yet. But yeah, I do see him getting probably 7 or 8 more. I think you said a really good number here. I mean, Inter playing really good football, come from behind win what the other day. So I just think the product of being on a good team, being an important player for a good team, and the fact that he does have 11, I mean, it's not bad or anything. I know I challenged him the other day on the podcast to maybe really explode like many thought he would, but it doesn't mean he's playing bad football at all. And I do think he's certainly capable of getting 7 and 17. Doesn't mean it's not a good number, but yeah, I mean, I rate him enough that my spite will not make me say under. So David, I am going to say that Lautaro just squeaks over. What are you saying?
Yeah, it's close, because the thing with Lautaro, we're not sure if he's the official penalty kicker at Inter. They kind of rotate that. Sometimes Di Marco, sometimes Calhanoglu, sometimes Lautaro. If you told me he definitely was taking penalties rest of the way, I almost would make it a lock that he gets there. Last season was his best in Serie A. He did 17, so we're asking him to do one more. Lukaku isn't in the mix. Second half of the season, Lukaku was absolutely devastating. Now, I don't know if Inzaghi's Inter is going to be as much as a second half team. It's Conte, they have the Champions League, but you know, with Liverpool, that could be just 2 games. So maybe we shouldn't make a huge deal of that. So I'm going to say over. I agree with you though, Alex, that Lautaro, I don't see him getting to 20. I'm not even really sure if he'll ever be exactly the type of striker that can do it, but he does help in other ways. So now let's look to the other striker at Inter. And you guys know I've been really, really high on Zico. I think he's been absolutely outstanding this season. I think probably deserves a little more credit than he is, but he also isn't a huge volume goal scorer. Got off to a fast start. So he has 8 so far. I'm going to set the over under at 13.5. So basically for him to go over, he needs to score 6 in the next 17 matches. Do you think he goes over or under?
I think he goes over, David. And once again, I think you said a good number because I don't think that much over. But also, Dzeko's a guy who, of course, isn't like pulling full 90s every week now, nor can he. But he also has only scored 1 goal since November 27th. But I actually look at that in a positive way. He had a couple assists in a row in that stretch, but he only scored 1 goal, and that was against Roma when they won 3-0. And I feel like we're going to have a little period where Dzeko then gets a good handful of goals again. And then if he does that, then all he needs is probably one or two more random goals towards the end of the season, and he's eclipsed it. So I'm not saying he's not a consistent player, but also because he's not playing full 90s anymore, you know, consistently, I think he's been managed well, and he will have probably a couple small hot streaks at the very least. So I do think he goes over. And I mean, remember, when you're a team that's competing for a lot, or at the very least, just a good team, it's usually the senior players, especially if they've been in the league for a long time, like Dzeko has, who don't run out of gas, David. You know, so especially if Dzeko's not going to be overrun in the middle of the season, then I feel like Dzeko's a player just as much as anyone, maybe even more than Lautaro, who's younger, who is going to know how to manage himself to the end of the season to make sure he still has something in the tank. So I also take that into account. Like, Dzeko's not new to the league. He knows how to score in this league. He's played in this league in every month many, many times. So I feel like, especially being on a good team, that's going to help him. So I do think he squeaks over. What about you?
Yeah, look, I love Dzeko. It is a good number. Let's look at his recent season. So in 2019-20, had 16. Last season only had 7. 2018 had 9. I'm with you. He has slowed down, but he still brings a lot of value. The thing with Inter, too, is how many different players score on this team. They really are a distribution really, really high. So I'm going to go just slightly under. I think he ends up right between 12-13, but I'm going to go slightly under, but with Dzeko still making a massive contribution. Now let's shift gears to Milan. And of course, I picked their two older strikers. So let's start with Zlatan, who quietly, I would say, has gone to 8, which is probably, it's more than I would have guessed, to be honest, when I look today. So Milan have 16 matches to go. Inter had 17. So important distinction there. So Zlatan has 8. I said a pretty aggressive over under 14.5. The thing with Zlatan is, what if he plays, he does score a lot. So maybe this is a pretty high number. I'm asking him to score 7 goals in the next 16 matches in Serie A. Do you think he can do it?
Can he? Yes. Will he? No, I don't think so. And am I also using emotion ever since he elbowed Aspi in the face and pretty much did not apologize for it whatsoever? Probably. I probably am. But at this point, too, I think I said in actually many past Calcioland episodes that he's not the one you doubt, right? You don't doubt him. You don't doubt Ronaldo. You don't doubt these freaks that are super, super old but still performing at a high level for top teams, or at least within the top 5 leagues. But I'm going to go against my own words. I am going to doubt him at this point that he can get 7 in, like you said, 16 games remaining. I'm not sure if that's because I'm not rating his overall play these days. That's probably not the case. Like you said, when he plays, he does score. He hasn't played that badly or anything like that. I can't really predict an injury, David, as you know from doing these over-unders for so long with me here. We don't really take in injuries into account, unless it's like a super injury prone player, because then we could just do that for everyone and it skews everything we're saying.
Yeah, I agree.
But
I agree.
Still, I just feel like something's going to be a little off with Zlatan to get to 7 goals in 16 games. Maybe it's Giroud, and I know we're about to do him. Maybe he hits a really good run of form. Another player who, yeah, of course he was with Chelsea last season, but another player who, since he's not playing full 90s every game, I mean, he really never does, then I feel like Giroud could have a lot left in the tank towards the end of the season. He is one of those players that goes on his own hot streak. So, yeah, I think for maybe just multiple reasons, Zlatan falls short of 7.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I will say this, and you're right that, you know, with the injury thing, we could do that all day. But, you know, he is older, so I'll put it this way. If you tell me Zlatan starts 12 matches, plays at least 60 minutes in those 12 matches, can he score 7 goals in 12 matches in this city? Yeah, I think he can, but I'm with you. I'm going to go under. Let's go quickly to Giroud. I have a feeling you're going to go over. So Giroud has 5 goals, 16 matches to go. I said the over-under at him getting to double digits. So he needs 5 more goals in the next 16 matches. I have a feeling I know where you're going with this one. Do you think he gets the double digits and scores five more goals?
I think he scores exactly five. Yep. So listen, he's not a guy, and we've spoken about this before, or at least lately, he's not a guy, and some of it's just due to playing time, where he gets mid-teens or anything like that. Definitely not. But I do think that he's going to have a couple games where he just is classic Ollie and maybe even gets a pair of braces. And then, like I said, he would only need one more goal to hit 10. So, yeah, I think he goes just slightly over. It just feels like it's about to be Giroux season to me. So, yeah, I'm saying slightly over.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I don't think it's going to be much more than that. The other thing is I think a lot of people are appreciating how valuable Rebic is to Milan. I think he's now become one of the most underrated players in Serie A. I think there's a world in which Rebic sometimes going to start either both of them, and I also think there's circumstances where we're going to see Zlatan and Giroud together. I think, you know, maybe not starting a lot, but I think there's going to be times there where he does. So I'm with you. I'm going to go over. I don't feel great about it, but that's also because I think Rebic and Leao are going to have a really, really strong finish to the season. Okay, let's go to Napoli. So Osimhen is back, had that awful injury, came into the second half of a recent game. So far he has 5 goals. Napoli have 16 matches to go. I said the over-under for him at 11.5. So he needs 7 goals in the next 16 matches. Do you think he gets there?
I really want to say he does, because I know you rate him a lot. I rate him a lot. Of course, he only has 5, not because he's been underperforming, but there's been an injury in account. He hasn't obviously seen the back of the net since, I think, October 21st in the Europa League. So it's been a little while. So the reason why I'm a little nervous is, how long is it going to take him to get firing again? And if it takes him a little long, then he could even hit good form towards the end of the season, but maybe he just falls short. But here's where I'm going to kind of play the heart card in an optimistic way. I just think by the end of the season, Osimhen's going to have double digits. So I could still be wrong, and he could have double digits and have 10 and go under, or 11 and go under. But I'm going to be an optimist and say that Victor Osimhen, injury or not, that he had this season, gets at least 12 goals, because I just view him as a player that is so determined to keep showing the world, the league, what he's about, and I think he will. And once again, I think being on a good team is going to help him here, because he's not going to be run into the ground, I would assume, especially coming back from an injury. So I feel like when he's out there, he is going to be fresh and probably determined to really make a mark in a very, very good team. So yeah, I'm going to say he just gets over. I'm not predicting like 15 or 16. He'd have to go really crazy for that. But I think he gets 12. I just feel like Osimhen has to have at least 12 goals this season.
You know, it's amazing. I almost feel like he's kind of forgotten right now. And I think this has to do with Vlahovic being absolutely incredible since Osimhen's injury. Tammy's really come on, and Lautaro has had a good stretch. And look, this was something we ranked these 4 players ad nauseum on this podcast for a while, because it was kind of the glory days of the number 9s in Serie A. And it's almost like it's almost forgotten, because so many of us, and I had Osimhen first for a while in that ranking. So I'm with you. It's a weird injury to come back from. On one hand, you could say, well, you know, it wasn't a leg injury. Maybe athletically he recovers. Psychologically, I don't know. If you read his Twitter, it sounds like maybe he can handle this, the stress of the face and all there. So I don't know. And I really like Spalletti, the way Napoli's playing. We know strikers have done really well there. Fabian Ruiz having a great season. Lozano has shown some signs a little bit recently. Insigne, I'm sure, will want to finish strong at Napoli. So I'm going to go over, but I'm with you, Alex. I don't feel great about it. It's almost because I really want him to. So I'm going to go over. I'm not sure how many more than that. There also is a world in which he just goes on a streak like Tammy is on now, where he just goes way over this. So just to recap where we're at so far, both Alex and I went over Lautaro, total 17.5 goals. Zeko, I went under, Alex, you went over, I went under for 8 goals for Dzeko, Ibra. We both are under. We're both over for Giroud, and we're both over for Osimhen. Okay, let's get to Atalanta. Duvan Zapata, who I for a while thought was going to be the best chance at stopping Vlahovic from winning the Serie A striker capocannoniere of the season. That is not looking like a very good prediction right now, although Zuvan has been pretty good at Atalanta. So Zapata right now has 9 goals in Serie A. Atalanta have 17 matches to go. I'm going to set the over-under at 16.5. So Duvan's going to need 8 goals rest of the way. I did see, not on our site, he is linked to Newcastle. I will say I think Duvan Zapata really is a nice striker for the Premier League. But back to the Atalanta thing, do you think he's going to score 8 more goals in the next 17 matches?
It's a really good number because he can go on a big hot streak. I mean, for a while, not too long ago, he had either a goal or an assist in every game. He had a really nice streak. And we know Atalanta themselves are just a team that can absolutely get on fire. So he definitely can reach this mark. I mean, in his career, he has surpassed this number of 16.5 that you've set for him. He has surpassed this number twice. One season scored 23. Following season scored 18. Last season, he had 15. Still great overall play with 9 assists. He's playing really well. Oh, man. Can he? Will he? Can he? Yes. Will he? I have a strange feeling he hits 16, which puts him right under. I really don't have a whole lot of reasoning behind it. Maybe because of what I'm going to say for the next guy. Maybe. But I want to just side with history and say, all right, he'll go over because he had 23, then he had 18 the following season. Last season, yeah, he fell short, but not by a lot. But maybe he just falls short once again. Like maybe he gets a crap load of assists again. Maybe he ends the season with 16-8 or 16-9, and that's still a really nice season statistically. So for some reason, I'm saying slightly under, but like at 16.
Yeah, the argument why he would go over, as you said, he's having a strong season. I was surprised. I thought he had more goals than that. Is also Atalanta's clearly a second half team. These are these games where they're just going to go on a run, you know, and I think there's going to be games where they put up a lot of goals. The other thinking is I looked up Muriel. He only has 4 goals this season. And you know, he's coming on and he's had some great moments. And again, I wouldn't have guessed that combined they only had 13 Serie A goals. And then there's another player, which we'll get to in a second. So I totally can talk myself on the under, but I'm going to go over. So I always like it when we slightly disagree. So I'm going to go over with him. Don't feel great, but I think they can get there. Now let's talk about Pasalic, former Chelsea player. Really incredible season for him so far. Like, he is not a regular starter at Atalanta. He does start here or there, but he's just incredible off the bench. His positioning, how he sets himself up for these goals is really remarkable. I think he's benefited incredibly for playing for Gasperini. So amazingly, Pasalic has 8 goals. He has doubled the amounts of Muriel so far this season. I set a pretty aggressive over-under because a midfielder to get for 13 goals is quite the statement. So I said the over-under 12.5, needs 5 goals in the next 17 matches. This almost feels like a layup. What do you think, Alex?
Well, the thing is, I mean, he's doing so well, like you said. And even though he really never played for Chelsea, we had him for a while. He was somebody I always kept track of. I do want to just play the heart card because I like him. But 5 more goals, if you just isolate that, does not seem hard for him at this point. Like you said, his instincts to just be in a place to score are really, really impressive. But for him to get 13 goals, I mean, he's straight up just doing something that he's never done before. Doesn't really matter where he's been. I mean, he had 8 goals last season. He's had 9 before in a single season for Atalanta. And then back when he was in the Croatian League, one season he had 11. He's always, obviously, for a midfielder, put up decent statistics. But to get to 13 goals. That's just something he hasn't done before. But then again, I mean, Alex shouldn't completely go with history because players develop, players get better. He clearly is. He's 26. It's not like he's 32. And we've kind of just seen his peak here. Maybe this is the true breakout season where he really explodes for goals. But I'm still going to side with history, David. Maybe it surprises you. I think he definitely hits double digits, which means he gets at least two more. Maybe he gets three or four more. But that would still just put him at 12. And if he had 12, that's still a really nice season from Pasalic, because he also has five assists already at this point. So even if he had no more assists and ended the season with 12 and five, that's pretty nice. So maybe I surprise you, but I just go an absolute tick under. Maybe he has 11 or 12.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good point. It is asking for a lot. And another, one way of looking at it, the last two seasons, he had 15 goals combined. So that is a pretty big stretch up. It's hard, but I'm going to go over again. I think I'm pretty confident on Atalanta going on a great run, but you're right. It is really asking for a lot for him to get to that. Okay, let's get to Juve. We've been doing it in the order of the standings. We're just at the very end. We're going to change the order because I want to talk a little bit about the Vlahovic situation. So let's get to one of the teams linked to Vlahovic, and that is Juventus. So of course I picked Paolo Dybala, and we talked at the beginning of the season. We kept saying, you know, is there any player on Juve you would definitely go over 13 goals? And we were like, it's really hard to pick. So Dybala has 7. Juve has 16 matches to go. So he has 7. I set the over at 13.5. So basically he has to match what he scored so far and get to 7 more goals in Juve's next 16 matches. Do you think Dybala gets there?
I don't. I mean, he obviously has the talent to. I'm not at all saying he's playing poorly. He's not. He's definitely not. But I don't know. I just feel like these days, Paulo Dybala, for one reason or another, David, does not get to that number. I just don't think he's scoring 14 goals in league at this point at Juve. I mean, I know obviously he has before. You have to go back now a handful of seasons to 17-18 when he had 22 goals. And then two seasons prior, he had 19. And then the season before, he had 13. But all right, only twice has he actually got to 14 goals, and that was really when Juve was absolutely phenomenal, and as was he, and he was getting Messi shouts. So I just don't think he gets to 14. I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's an injury. I don't know if it's just Juve getting in his way almost with just being inconsistent, but I don't think he gets to 14. I think he hits double digits, and I think that maybe even, because I'm not going to account for an injury, that's unfair, maybe even his season wraps up comparatively to recent seasons as a success, but I don't think he hits 14. And if he does, by the way, if he does, we talked about his value around Europe's top five leagues and how Premier League fans don't look at him really in that much of an attractive way anymore, and how Chiesa, despite the injury, is now like the guy from Juve that Premier League fans would want. If Dybala gets to 14, I know he's now a lot older than when he was first yearned for by other fans. He's not old. I feel like that should get him some respect within the top five leagues again. Like, maybe not a guy that you're going to buy and he's going to just completely flip upside down your team. But I feel like if he gets to 14 or roughly around there, teams should look at him if they have the right system for him, David. That's so, so important. Like, you can't just put Dybala into a random system. But I feel like, you know, if he was to leave Juve, I feel like he should have some interest. But I am going to say slightly under.
Interesting. I think I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to go over, and we're kind of the midway of this exercise almost done. So I'm trying to think to what are some of my locks, and it's kind of almost creeping into that. And I'll tell you why. There's two reasons. A, I think he's super motivated with the contract situation. Mm-hmm. I think he really wants to show Juve, hey, I am worth the money you were offering. And he wants to, you know, at least raise his market there. And the other reason, it goes back to what we were saying at the start of the season. Like, I don't see anyone else on Juve who is going to score a lot of goals. Allegri is a second half of the season type manager. He takes penalties. I actually feel pretty confident that he does, of course, injury aside. And look, with Dybala, probably more than a lot of the players that we've talked so far, maybe other than Ibra, it's the one where the injuries should be most of a factor because of recent history. But I'm going to be confident. I'm going to say he does get there. I just think he has a lot at stake here, and I think he'll be super motivated. And I have to say, you know, Dybala used to be one of my favorite players in Serie A. I'm warming up back to him. So we're going to skip Fiorentina now. We're going to do them last because I want to talk about Vlahovic. Let's jump to Roma. I have a feeling I know where we're both going with this one. Absolutely love Tammy, what he's done so far at Roma. I think he had a lot of bad luck to start the season. It's all coming back to him. He's on a great roll. Yesterday did well in the Coppa Italia. Again, you know, I always say transfer fees matter only if the player is a bust or if it prevents you from buying other players. Maybe spending 40 million did hurt a little bit Roma in that regard, but you do that deal a million times over. Again, I've said it many times. You look at whether Moise Kean's price tag and some other strikers, Tammy at 40 million really doesn't sound that bad. I think he could pretty much start for any of the teams we've discussed so far. In some cases, it might be a slight upgrade. So I can't contain my enthusiasm for Tammy. So I'll tell you, Roma, 16 games to go. He has 8. I set the over-under at 14.5. So I'm going to need him to score 7 goals in the next 16 matches. This is going to be my lock, too. So I'm all in on Tammy going over this. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Alex Goldberg is going over. But it's not a bad number, David. Here's just why
It is a pretty tough number.
Yeah, no, I think you set the number correctly. But that doesn't mean that it isn't easy for us. You know, sometimes Vegas sets the number correctly, but because you might really be watching a team and you know how they're doing, you just know, all right, even though this is a fair number, I'm absolutely taking the over or the under in that case. But in this case, yeah, he's going over. Like you said, he had some bad luck. Like, he was playing good football but wasn't getting stats for it for a little while at the beginning of the season. But also, I will use history to my advantage here. In his first season for Chelsea in the first team, so Lampard's first season, you know, that transfer ban first season, he scored 15. He was Chelsea's leading scorer, and he did it without taking pens. Like, that was so underrated. Yeah. He had 15 Premier League goals in that first season with Chelsea. And, of course, that season was an overall success. You know, it got top 4, which surprised so many people, lost in the FA Cup. But still, I mean, that was an overall successful season. He had 15 Premier League goals, and he never took pens. Jorginho takes them. And Tammy had been used to taking them for Aston Villa and just whatever team he was on. Of course, in the championship, I mean, this guy just scores. And let's not demean the championship. It's like a decent league, David. You know, it's not actually that far away from the top 5 leagues, like if you want to say like a Liga overall competitiveness-wise, tough-wise. He scored 25 before. He scored 23 before. The guy just scores. And if you want to say, well, last year he only had 6. Once Tuchel came, he didn't play. Tuchel just decided, you know what? Respect to Tammy. It wasn't about Tammy's attitude. He just wanted something different stylistically. I still think Tuchel might be regretting that, but I digress. Tammy is at least a 15-goal-a-season score in league. I just fully believe that. And yeah, I mean, the way he's playing with Roma right now, his little momentum right now, what a great goal, great assist. He's looking really good. So if he's fit, he plays pretty much. And of course, the other thing, David, you said that Dybala, and I like your reasoning that a contract year could make him kind of really be driven to get over that number. I also just think Tammy always has a chip on his shoulder, but especially, just let's think about this. Last point. Do you think Tammy doesn't know what's going on at Chelsea? You think he doesn't know? Of course he knows. He knows that their £100 million striker that he was discarded for is absolutely stinking up the joint. And I don't mean that even on the pitch. Like, Lukaku, I mean, he's not doing great on the pitch. But more importantly, like, Lukaku has ruined the dressing room at Chelsea. Tammy was a plus for the dressing room all the way through. What a professional. When Tuchel wasn't playing him, what a professional. What a guy. So likable. Tammy knows what's going on. He's going to get over. He's getting at least 15, David. I think he gets maybe 16 or 17.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And look, credit to Mourinho, because in no world does Tammy Abraham go to Roma without Mourinho and that appeal there. So look, you know, anyone can be, you know, for anyone that's been the most critical of Mourinho, I would point out that, look, you know, getting Tammy, and look, there is that option, Chelsea, 80 million, but that would be a great coup for them. And who knows, maybe they'll just swap him for Lukaku, an absolute coup. And Mourinho will always have that to point out. Just a great signing. I love Tammy. Not as much as you, because you know him way better, but been a huge fan for a while. Okay, before we get to Vlahovic, let's get to Immobile, who's had a great season. I had concerns at the start of the season because Lazio was going from Inzaghi's counter-attacking style to Sarri's 4-3-3 or version of that, which is eerily similar to the way Mancini has Italy play. So I pointed out, hey, it's not so sure that Immobile is going to be great for Lazio because he struggles on Italy. Man, was that not a good call. Immobile is tied with Vlahovic with 17 goals. He has 17. Lazio has 16 games to go. I said the over-under for him at 26.5, which is a lot. So he needs to get 10 goals in 16 matches. But with Immobile, that's not out of the question. Was I too aggressive with the over-under, Alex?
Slightly, in my opinion. That's not to say he can't do it. I mean, obviously, we know a few seasons ago he had 36, which is just insane. Two seasons prior, he had 29. So he can do it. He can absolutely do it. This guy just scores and scores and scores. I mean, even way back when, I know it was actually in Serie B, but, you know, he had 28. So if I'm going to use that for Tammy, I'll use it for Ciro. Like, the guy, wherever he's playing, can easily get into the 20s. He's gotten, of course, 22 before with Torino, 23 before with Lazio, 20 last season, 17 now. I mean, that's really impressive. Oh, man. He could definitely get 9 more. He definitely could. Or would he need 10 more in this case?
Yeah, he does need 10. So I think that was a little aggressive. Let's make it 25.5. That's a little aggressive. So let's say he gets 9 more. Do you think he does that?
I'm still going to go under. I think he ends the season with 25, right on the dot, 25.
Okay. I'm going to say he gets to 26. It's asking for a lot, but he scored against Inter, scored 2 against Salernitana, scored in the Coppa Italia. Milinkovic-Savic is on a nice roll. I think Zaccagni is playing better, getting something out of Luis Alberto. It's aggressive. But I think Immobile is going to be capocannoniere again. So I'm going to say 26 is what he gets. That over under 26.5 was a little bit too high. Okay, let's close on Vlahovic. We'll first do the over under, and then I'll give you a couple of thoughts on the transfers. So Vlahovic has 17 goals so far this season. Fiorentina has 17 matches to go. I said the over under for him at 25.5. So he needs 8 more goals to get over that. Do you think he does?
I do. I do. I think probably 8 on the dot, maybe 9.
Yeah, my bad. It's 9 goals. My math's really off. Sorry. He has 17, so he needs to get to 26. That's 9 goals. Sorry.
Yeah. I still think he just squeaks over. I do. I like what he's about. Like, I get a good vibe from him. And the reason why I say that is, if a guy who is so sought after didn't really have the right mentality, I feel like, especially as the season gets later on, they might kind of turtle and hope that people still rated them on what they had done prior. But no, I think Vlahovic has a complete season here. And I'm not at all projecting. I know you believe in him long term. I'm not saying I don't, but I haven't watched as much of him as you have and as some of our listeners have to say that this guy is clearly going to be one of Europe's best strikers for a long, long time. But I certainly, David, believe in spurts for strikers. Not breakout seasons, because, of course, he was really good last season, but periods of time for strikers, especially in Serie A. I'm not demeaning the league or anything like that, but I know a Belotti can do really well for a couple years, and a Mobile can do really well for a long time, a Zapata can do really well for a decently long time. So especially within this league, I believe in kind of a striker really feeling themselves. And I'll say it again, I'm not saying that Vlahovic can't do this in another league, But I do think he is going to finish the season strong as well. I mean, 26 goals is a lot. It definitely is. And man, I mean, I would tell Fiorentina to just hold off on selling him now. I'm not saying they're going to, because if you get 26, I mean, I think everyone's knocking on the door for him, and they probably already are. But yeah, I think he gets 9 more. I think it's a really good number set by you, because 10 more? No, that seems too steep. But 9 more, I don't know if it's the optics of going from single digits to double digits, but I will say just over, David.
Yeah, no, I'm on the Vlahovic train. I do think he gets to 26. He's just on a great roll. He has a manager that plays a very offensive style. They brought him in a new toy in Ikoné. Look, and this is obviously on the assumption that he's finishing the season at Fiorentina, and I think he wants to keep raising his profile. So I'll go over. Before we move over to game picks, just a couple of thoughts on Vlahovic. So there is this report from Gazzetta dello Sport. That's not a report from Gianluca Fabrizio Romano. So, you know, we can take it for what it is, that Juve is willing to offer $35 million plus Kulusevski for Vlahovic. So there is now buzz that Juve is back in the race for Vlahovic. For a while, they looked like the favorites, players will, and that Vlahovic only wanted to go there. Then in January, we heard both from Romeo Agresti, who was superb on Juve, and Di Marzio, obviously, is the king of transfers in Italy, saying that Juve just wasn't going to be able to afford his salary because Vlahovic was now asking for a lot of money on his contract. And I think this is always the most underrated aspect in almost always transfer stories is wages. I keep saying people need to pay attention a lot more than that. So let's look at it this way. Vlahovic has a ton of leverage, has just a year and a half left on his contract. No team's going to make like a huge offer to Fiorentina without knowing they're going to have Vlahovic long term. So he has the leverage. Fiorentina has been trying over and over again for him to like publicly state what he wants to do, or at least tell him what they want to do. Fiorentina also bought Piontek as kind of insurance in case Vlahovic leaves. I think in a lot of ways, Fiorentina is like, you know what? We just want to get a good return for Vlahovic. The more time passes, the odds of that happening are lesser. Now, Vlahovic, again, has to pick his destination. So any team that wants to make a big offer to Fiorentina has to know that Vlahovic is going to go there. Juve probably knows that. I'm sure Juve is the last place Fiorentina would like to send him to. But again, Vlahovic has the leverage. So if Vlahovic says, hey, you know, Juve is the only team I'm going to sign. Once my contract expires, you have to work out a deal with them. That's one hurdle. And that's players' will working to Juve's advantage. The flip side is the wages. I've talked ad nauseum how everyone in Serie A is trying to cut wages. Juve, very aggressively, they had an incredibly bloated payroll for a while. They were so willing to cut payroll that, you know, they took a loss on Ronaldo's amortized value just to get rid of that contract. And that was the only, that's not the only player they've done that. They really don't want to add wages. Now, of course, Vlahovic is a young player that's different than a washed up older player, so you're like, hey, you know, this guy's always going to have some future resale, so maybe there's some opening there. I think in an ideal world, Fiorentina would be very happy to sell Vlahovic to a Premier League team and just get money. Yeah, is Kulusevski plus $35 million? That sounds like a pretty good offer, but it's not as good as just getting $80 million. And look, I'm a big Kulusevski guy, but he's been really, really bad at Juve. Italiano does not play a counter-attacking style, which maybe I'm wrong, but that seems where Kulusevski would really thrive, is what he was playing at Parma. It's kind of weird because on the surface, you would say Allegri should work well for him, but he's been absolutely dreadful. I thought the game against Sampdoria was really bad, but maybe he has some value still as a young player who was great at Parma. So I don't know. I think in an ideal world, if it were up to Fiorentina, they would sell him to a Premier League team for 70, 80 million and call it a day. So it's very interesting, but watch the wages. I think that's the factor that's always underrated. I've talked about it ad nauseum. Every Serie A club is trying to cut payroll. It wasn't that surprising to me that there was no market whatsoever on a Bosman deal. In Serie A for Insigne and Belotti, and a few years ago, those guys would have had multiple teams trying to sell them. So let's see what happens with Vlahovic. If you're a Juve fan, I think it is encouraging that Juve appears to be back a little bit in the mix. So let's see what happens. Also, I don't know how much of a factor Juve being in the Champions League or not would have for Vlahovic, again, because he's essentially a pre-Bosman player where he has a lot of leverage where deciding where to go. And look, gun to the head, Fiorentina did sell Chiesa to Juve, and that was with Commisso. I mean, they had sold Bernardeschi to Juve, but that was the previous regime, the De La Valle. So it's not like Commisso hasn't done this. And I think, you know, if the choice is get nothing for Vlahovic or get something, but he goes to Juve, I don't know. It sounds like Juve might be the best option there. Okay, let's get 2,000 names. And this is dangerous because I have not checked what he sent me for the games over the weekend. So let's get to them. There are some good matchups this weekend in Serie A. So we're going to start with the Sunday game, Sunday afternoon. I might make an appearance at the Boston Milan Fan Club get together, which is always fun at Ducali in the North End. So 1,000 has Milan winning 3-2, goals by Florenzi, Calabria, Giroud, and Dybala. So good for our over-unders, Giroud and Dybala scoring. He says Maignan's going to save a penalty on Cuadrado. And he says Pioli is going to destroy Allegri despite Orsato is the referee of the manager. And he says Serra was the manager, the referee of the Spezia game, is in the stands still with tears in his eyes celebrating with the Milan players. And that Szczesny is going to have a disastrous game. In Italian, Milan Juve 3-2, Florenzi Calabria, Giroud, doppietta Dybala. Ooh, good for over-unders. Maignan's going to say para rigore a Cuadrado, Pioli abbatte Allegri nonostante Orsato, Serra in tribuna ancora in lacrime, festeggia coi giocatori, Szczesny disastroso, fidatevi. Now, Juve's been playing very well in Serie A. They did lose the Super Cup to Inter, but I thought that was actually a plus for Juve. I think there are some encouraging signs there. It's going to be very interesting to see how Milan react to that Spezia game. I thought Pioli handled it perfectly because you cannot give your players an excuse. He said, hey, we should have done a better job and closed the game earlier. And I think that was the best way to handle it. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this develops. I'm going to go 0-0. This game. If Milan wins, they can certainly put themselves in really good shape, at least for a Champions League spot. Next up, good game. Atalanta-Lazio. I love Gasperini and Sarri going at each other. 1,000 has Atalanta winning 2-0. Muriel, 2 goals. Pasalic, red card. He says Gasperini is going to swallow down Sarri. Dea is going to be Atalanta setting themselves up for a Champions League spot. And that Lotito is going to regret the fact that Simone Inzaghi left. In Italian, Atalanta-Lazio 2-0, Muriel, Pasalic espulso, Gasperini in guai a Sarri, Dea sempre più irraggiungibile per la Champions, Lotito ripiange Limone. I'm going to agree with 1,000. Gasperini has always done well against Sarri, and this is when Atalanta wasn't quite Atalanta and Sarri was at his peak with Napoli, and I'm going to give goals to both Pasalic and Duvan because I have overs for them. Okay, last up, Cagliari hosting Fiorentina. Cagliari desperately needs some points. 1,000 has Fiorentina winning 1-0, goal by João Pedro. He says Mazzarri is going to start his miraculous salvation despite playing awful football. And he says Italiano is going to take a lesson from the master Mazzarri. And that he says Altarek, which is one of Cagliari's defenders, is going to cancel Vlahovic. I don't know if I share his optimism. Cagliari's been a little bit better recently. They are making a lot of moves on the transfer market. Some would say some of them feel like additions by subtraction. I'm going to go Fiorentina winning 2-0, and I'll give two goals to Vlahovic for my overs. Okay, so 1,000 names. Thank you so much. You know, Alex, when we do over-unders to start the season, maybe we can have 1,000 on with us, which would be fun. But before we get to Fulvio Santucci, really a great interview. We're going to do a part of the pod for our patrons. If you enjoyed what you heard so far today or in other episodes, consider becoming a patron. You'll get an episode every Tuesday, you know, where we talk about the weekend and Serie A, highlight some main storylines in the show, do our winners and losers. It's a fun show. You get to ask us questions. We also have some tiers with articles. We had a superb article by Enrico Passarella on Salernitana being very active on the transfer market. We try to cover all of Serie A, just the top teams there. It's a great stuff. If you don't want to support us on Patreon, that's perfectly fine. Please consider leaving us a rating on Spotify. You can now leave ratings there. And on iTunes, we really do appreciate if you leave a comment on iTunes. I always read them. So appreciate your support. We also improved the audio based on feedback from there. So, you know, if you feel like the audio is better and you had concerns in the past, please leave us a positive review.
I'm thrilled to be joined by our guest today, Fulvio Santucci, his first appearance on the pod of the year. He was our Inter correspondent last year, did a fantastic job. So I'm glad we are bringing him back. He is based in Milano. Yesterday, as I was going through the question we were going to go over, man, there is so much to talk about Inter. So I'm very glad to have you on. So Fulvio, bentornato to Calcioland. Always a real pleasure to chat calcio with you.
Ciao, David. Pleasure is mine. Thank you for this invitation and happy new year, everyone, since it's the first time being here in 2022.
Perfect. Okay, so let's start here. And there's a reason why I really wanted you to come on today beyond all the storylines regarding Inter, because you're a passionate fan, but I really like you're very objective. You always try to look at the big picture. So I'm just going to ask you this. As someone who follows Serie A closely, who sympathizes more than sympathizes for Inter, what was your reaction to what happened at the end of Milan-Spezia?
Tough question, David. You really got me here. Okay, to be honest, for an Inter fan, it's been all very enjoyable. Let's not tell lies. It's been all very enjoyable because they should have won because eventually they lost and they are rivals, but also directly involved into the title race. So yeah. Emotionally speaking, for an Inter fan, it was perfect. The perfect final for this story. On the other perspective, when you go into your senses and you retrieve some rationality inside you, you see that it's a rob. It's a clear rob. It's a clear mistake. And clearly, in all universes, multiverses that you can think about it, AC Milan should have won the game 2-1, right? So. We are here in front of something that is actually a result changer. And that's proof that is a result changer because it was basically the 11th hour because Spezia was defending the draw in the last 20 minutes before this happened. And also because the second goal of Spezia was in a particular situation, and you can actually see from the movement of the AC Milan player that they were shocked by the decision, still thinking about that, so distracted, and eventually they concede. So yeah, it's a fake result, to be honest. Shouldn't happen. Already happened in the past. I mean, most likely you talk about this for 1 week, probably two, and eventually you talk about that at the end of the season if this event directly affects the final standing. But anyway, I mean, it's something that in the first level on a top league, you should never see. Never. I think you're on mute.
Sorry about that. So yeah, you're right. We are definitely have been talking about it for a while. I have a feeling we'll be talking about this for probably years, depending on how the Scudetto races ends. You know, the Gol di Muntari is still brought up now. But I'll tell you this, and you're an Inter fan, and you know, I've said this before. I thought Inter are clearly the best team in Serie A. I think that, and I know Toccaferro, whatever you got to do, I think they look really good for the Scudetto, but it's undeniable that even if, say, Inter has a pretty big margin in points, a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, look at what happened in the momentum. So I do think one of the things that Milan fans say, which I think is pretty fair, it's not so much the mistake, it's also the timing. Obviously, it could have been a big edge on Juve for the last Champions League spot, kept them there with Inter. So in your opinion, ultimately, how much does this swing things one way or the other for the Scudetto? Or do you feel that in the end, Inter, you know, it would ultimately not change too much, but it'll be something that people will always bring up?
Yes, exactly as you said in this last part. So probably won't affect so much in terms of concrete terms, the Scudetto race. But of course, will be brought up in the same way. Inter fan brought up a lot what happened in Firenze with Abisso referee when they concede a penalty when basically D'Ambrosio didn't touch the ball with the hand, wasn't an end ball, and it was a last whisper penalty conceded led to a tie. And Inter was involved in the Champions League race since the last match day, which was a drama against Empoli. And I remember clearly that before the game, a lot of Inter fans said, "Okay, if with the proper refereeing in Firenze, we won't be in this situation." So yes, people will bring up, and I mean, it's fair. You can do nothing about that because it's clearly a damage for them. But concretely speaking, I don't think this will affect the Scudetto race. What I think will be really, really affected from this event is the relegation race.
Ah, interesting, yeah.
Because 3 points from Spezia when they wasn't expected by anyone, I mean, even neither by them, Spezia players, Spezia supporters, but 3 points in a relegation race where you can avoid the hell by making probably 35 points, we are talking about big stuff here.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I believe, yes, I believe that if Spezia manage to avoid the relegation, and that 3 points might make a big, big, big difference. Yeah, but of course it's relegation race, so small team, small fan base. I mean, it's not so discussed for this reason. But concretely speaking, in terms of numbers, the relegation race seems to be the more affectable from this.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I'd say maybe even the Champions League race, let's see what happens with Juve and Milan. But great point there. And next week, guys, we'll get Daniele Mazzanti's perspective to get a Milan side on this. But let's start talking a little about Inter. I want to ask you about three players that stand out to me. They are of different ages. One's a prospect. One is smack in his prime. And another one's towards the end of his career. So tell me, in which order, which player surprised you most? And I assume in positive, seeing how well they've played this season, between Bastoni, Çalhanoğlu, and Perisic, who I think has been really outstanding this year.
Yeah, you're right. Bastoni, actually, I mean, even Çalhanoğlu as well. Çalhanoğlu and Bastoni shared the fact that did not start the season so well. I mean, until end of October, they were not the player that they will after that. But when we talk about the contribution to the team, the player that surprised me most was Çalhanoğlu. Of course, Çalhanoğlu, because it was a deal that shouldn't happen without the emergency situation with Christian Eriksen. right? He came from the rival team, so it's always difficult, especially for us, because Inter has a long story of deal with the AC Milan, when normally it's AC Milan that takes the best from players, right? And Calhanoglu as well, we all see that he had great skills. He always has great skills, but also is inconsistent. He's normally inconsistent in his career. And Inter was losing Conte, losing Hakimi, after a short time losing Lukaku as well. Nobody saw Calhanoglu as a key player, and eventually became. So on the perspective of the technique of the technical, of the skill, of what you see on the pitch in the terms of the game and the ball and all the things that connected to the game, my answer is Calhanoglu. But when we come to Perisic, I mean, Perisic is having an incredible season.
Yes.
And is it surprising as well? But it's surprising because he put leadership into the team. And that is surprising for us because Perisic is an Inter since a long time. We're talking about 2015, so completely another world. Yes. And I mean, not constant because...
He was a Bayern, yeah.
It was the Bayern, there was the Bayern spell of 1 year, but for 4 years at least, Perisic was very discussed into the fan base because he had great physical skills, but when it came to leadership, when it came to decision making, when it came to efficiency, especially in the box, it was not performing so much well. Right. And it was 4 years. And all of a sudden, this is lasting since February 2021, all of a sudden, this player completely changed his attitude, became a key player in the Scudetto last year, and is a key player for this team right now. And I tell you this, David, in the perspective of the game against Liverpool, which will be a tough one for Inter. I think that Perisic is probably the only one that is able now to keep up the pace of the Liverpool players in terms of speed, in terms of stamina, in terms of intensity and this kind of things. So it's a great resource for Inter and surprised me a lot in terms of leadership because it's clearly one of the leader of this team and might be the leader of a winning team, which is something that was completely unpredictable 3 years ago.
Yeah, very well said. And look, it's pretty rare for a player to come back from a loan and then make a big impact on a team, especially a veteran player like Perisic. And I think offensively, he's bringing something that has been lost with Hakimi leaving. So he's been sensational. So I want to ask you about Barella next, because going into the season, I think a lot of people saw Barella with Chiesa and Zaniolo as maybe really the most exciting Italian players for the future. Now, Chiesa's out injured. He wasn't having a particularly good season under Allegri. Zaniolo's been back, been a little bit hit or miss. Barella continues to be a really, really great player for Inter. So how do you assess Barella's season so far? Do you see him kind of distancing himself a little bit from Chiesa and Zaniolo when we think of the great Italian players to lead the Azzurri for years to come?
No, actually, I think this is Barella is the one. It's already. It's not something for the future. It's something for the present as well. And we saw at the last Euro Cup. When compared to Chiesa and Zaniolo, have a big advantage, which is not having so far, of course, any major injury. While Chiesa is just having one right now, and Zaniolo is had two. Zaniolo had two major injuries, which are also, always a big deal. I think that the season is probably not like the last one. But not so much far. I mean, Barella is a little bit discussed in Inter fan this year, especially because we have Brozovic, which is, his best mate, but also the player that play the closest to him. that is having an incredible season, probably, I mean, probably world-class player season for Brozovic this year. So it's easy to see that Barella is not keeping up the pace of that kind of performance. But I was looking yesterday at the stats of Barella because I was looking at the stats of Frattesi, which is one of the players that Inter wants for the future. And I saw that actually it's one of the best midfielder of the season, statistically speaking, even this year. I mean, he's able to do everything, acceleration, and he made 7 assists, especially the beginning of the year, of course. But okay, he made 7 assists, which is a lot. Only 1 goal, and this is probably the thing that surprised the most, because Inter basically lets his player score a lot, like Skriniar scored 2 or 3 goals, Bastoni scored as well, and only 1 goal from Barella. It's a little bit disappointing, but in terms of everything that's concerned the rest, he's having a good season. I mean, probably not an outstanding season, but for sure he's achieving a lot, and I think it's due to the fact that the guy basically go on with the play for 2 years straight. I mean, practically no holiday for him for a lot of reasons, COVID strike including as well. So I mean, it was in a bad shape even in the last two games of the Italy at the Euro, the most important one, semi-final and final. Barella was one of the worst players on the field, but we knew that it was because he was tired as hell, and this season is a little bit kind of that. But in the perspective of the future, I think the Azzurri could secure a great player in him and can count on him for a lot of time.
I have to say, I picked up on your Brozovic comment, because he's a player, obviously, we've talked a lot about on the podcast, and I don't want to misquote you, but I think your position was always like Brozovic is fantastic to have against 80, 90% of the teams, but when you play a really great team, he can get a little bit exposed. Do you feel he's getting over that, and do you think the Liverpool matches might be a really good opportunity for him, though?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, he played 2 big games against Real Madrid, and he played well. I think it was man of the match as well, in the UEFA man of the match of the first leg with Real Madrid. But it was group stage, and group stage is not knockout. It's completely different. So let's see. Yes, especially in the Europa League final against Sevilla back in 2020, gave this impression. But to be honest, Brozovic never ever played in his career at Inter, which is longer, since 2015 as well, never ever played like this. So we just sit and watch and see if Brozovic can actually keep up the pace with one of the biggest teams in Europe, top 3 teams in Europe for me, like Liverpool. So it's an occasion, it's a chance to see if his performance in Serie A are comparable to what he can do in a big team or not. Yeah. But let's see, I'm trustful.
Yeah, no, I'm very interested, because you're always one of my go-to guys when I think of Brozovic. So let's look at the other side of the ledger. I think last season, a lot of people would have said, you know what, De Vrij might be the best defender on Inter. He's just tailor-made for the back 3. I think he was really, really underrated. This year, on the other hand, you know, and Bastoni's having a great year, Skriniar's really gotten used to the back 3. I'm not saying he's a full-blown liability, but to me, he looks like the weakest of the 3. Do you agree with this assessment?
Yes, I agree. But I would say that he's not the weakest. He's probably the less strong. How can I say? I mean,
Skriniar
is having an incredible season, and it's like incredible 2 seasons. It's like he never stopped playing since the last year, because he played the same way and never suffered the transition from Conte to Inzaghi, while suffers a lot the transition from Spalletti to Conte. Bastoni, on the other hand, suffered the transition of the coaches, But when he found the waiters to be on the pitch, he actually became incredible and man of the match, eligible practically in every game. And this starts, as I said, like beginning of November, probably mid-November. De Vrij is actually having some kind of mistake lately. I mean, it's not the best of luck for him this season. He had an injury with the national team. I mean, not major, yeah. But still, probably just break the shape that he had back in the days. Then he scored the own goal at the derby. At the end of the day, it was defining for the results. Made a mistake against Lazio, made a mistake against Juventus in the Supercoppa. So yes, some mistakes are there. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's probably the performance of the last 2 years from De Vrij were incredibly too good, right?
Yeah.
Something that you say, okay, this is incredible, but it couldn't last forever. And I think that's the fact. I think it's what is happening to him. But I see on the fan base discussion on him, and I think they are undervaluing the fact that it's very difficult to replace De Vrij, especially because of his role. I mean, Bastoni made his role against Venezia, and he made well, but Venezia practically was a game that was not so demanding when it comes to the defense. It's difficult to replace De Vrij, especially because he give the times to the defense, he give the command, and it's always going to be exposed to any kind of mistake. And each mistake that he made at the center of defense is going to be seen a lot more than the other two. So it's very difficult to replace this player, and I think that Inter fans need to go easy with him, because we know that probably won't be here the next season, but replacing this player won't be easy, and won't be easy for Inter, won't be easy especially for the other two, both Skriniar and Bastoni.
Well said. So let's talk a little bit about that. And I think, you know, part of it that people are surprised is obviously De Vrij was used to Inzaghi, and maybe it was a little bit harder for him. But let's talk about the potential replacement, which looks to be Ginter. And I know you're very familiar with the Bundesliga. You used to follow Çalhanoğlu there. What do you make of him as a potential replacement for De Vrij?
Ginter is not a bad player. The only thing is that I never see some incredible excellences or some major skills that keep him differently from other defenders. On the other side, I never see weakness. So we're talking about average player. But I saw him in the Borussia Mönchengladbach spell. The first 2 years were very good. After that, he went to play the Euro Cup with Germany. Normally, is not a starting player, but Germany had contingencies in the Euro Cup, and eventually he was starting player, and it was basically a disaster, especially against France. He's not so used to play that kind of game, the common level. That kind of level is not familiar with that kind of level. And I think that is affecting him, because I saw three or four Mönchengladbach match this year. I mean, all the team actually had a difficult start, a struggling start of the season, but he seemed distracted. He's making a lot of mistakes. Besides, he it's like now 26 or 27, and he never knew anything else than the German football. And it's not so easy when you need to go to the Italian football for a defender. So a lot of tactical and a lot of attention of the detail, especially on the defensive part, he needs to be very good to adapt another language completely. So Not so easy, but I mean, it's up to him. I don't see this kind of player as the perfect replacement for a defense like the Inter one, which has been the best, hands down, in Italy in the last two, probably also 3 years. So I mean, it's okay if you can bring him on a free deal. It's okay, but I mean, thinking of him as a starting, it's not so easy for me. I mean, when the name is Bremer, the CB from the Brazilian CB from Torino, it's completely different because he showed, because he had consistency, because he played a lot of big games in the Serie A. And always being one of the best, he knows the league, he knows the league, he knows the language, he knows the secrets of the other teams is different. I mean, if you talk to me about Bremer, I say, okay, let's sign him and let's put him as a starter. But when it comes to Ginter, I have some doubts.
Yeah, you know, Bremer, too, I think, has really benefited from having Juric this season. Juric has gotten a lot out of center backs, to say the least. So I'm totally with you there. But one thing that maybe could help Inter if, say, they move on from De Vrij and bring in Ginter is they could potentially have an upgrade at the keeper position. So I'm curious to get your thoughts here. So Onana signed the Bosman. I don't think it's official, but everyone knows he's going to Inter. My guess is it's probably going to be a little bit like Buffon, Szczesny at Juve that first year that Onana comes in and alternates with Handanovic. But, you know, this seems like a good move. So what do you make of Onana in general? Do you think, are you pretty comfortable with him being Inter's keeper for the foreseeable future after the season?
I'm okay with that. I know that the guy needs to work, especially because it's a 26-year-old player, which in the other part of the field should be the best year for a player. But for a goalkeeper, it's probably way too early, especially when you play in a big team, unless you are Donnarumma. But that's a completely different kind of player, completely different generational player. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a player that 26 years old in a big team when actually you can never afford to make a mistake will be difficult, will be challenging, but he can improve. I mean, I know him not so well, but enough, I would say. And I think that Inter talked about him not only because there was the possibility of go with a Bosman deal, which will be a must during the next summer, as you know, but also because he's very good playing with the feet. I mean, it's the modern goalkeeper needs to play with the feet, and Danovic is very good to do that and is improving a lot, still improving, even though he's 37, but in this, he's still improving. All the rest, some doubts. I mean, some decisions are difficult. He made not so much mistakes, but incredible mistakes. I mean, huge one. The one that, graphically, you remember that, right? As the one that made in the Africa Cup of Nations, like 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that kind of mistake, right? That kind of mistake that are actually, everybody knows that it's a mistake, right? There's no discussion. And that's the worst when you are an Inter, we are an Inter player, and the Inter fan never forgive you anything about that. So I would like Inter to go on a solution like the Buffon-Szczesny one. Especially because you know that I'm not the biggest fan of Handanovic. Along the years here in Calcioland, but also on the Twitter, you know that I'm not the biggest fan, right? But I have to say that Handanovic has actually had his best calendar year. 2021 was his best calendar year, distributed on two seasons. Probably the best in 5 years. Wow. And this season is not so much different. I think he's still a player difficult to replace. Yesterday in the Coppa Italia against Empoli, Radu played. He did not play bad. I mean, never, he did not do anything wrong about that. But you see that with Andanovic is different, especially when it comes to play with the team and starting the transition with the ball, it's different. So I think and I guess that Andanovic could stay 1 year. It's very difficult to say for me, but I think might be the best solution.
Yeah. Okay, so let's close on two hot topics. And today you had a lot of tough questions. As always, you did a great job. Let's start with Dybala. And I know Marotta yesterday said, well, you know, when a player of Dybala's caliber happens to become available on a Bosman, you know, you have to investigate. So I have a feeling based on Dzeko's age, and I think Dzeko's been superb this season, that you'd probably want more of a classic number nine, someone like Vlahovic. But what do you make of the idea of Dybala potentially joining to Inter? Would you like Marotta to really try, or are you content with Inter just making it more miserable for Juve to try to resign him?
Well, I don't think so. I think the player might be very interesting for Inter. I mean, Dybala is a great player. He suffers because I think that he's now on the edge of 30s. I think because he's from 93, so it's like 29 years old the next year. I think he never expressed his full potential because Juventus never gave him a chance to be the center of the project, right? Because in the years that Dybala was required to be at the center of the project, they put Cristiano Ronaldo instead. So Dybala was a controversial player for Juventus, but I think that in the system that Inzaghi raised at Inter, Dybala might be very good, and I think Inter is thinking about him as a replacement for Sanchez, not for Lautaro, as I read, which might be an obvious choice, but I think Sanchez, it's a little bit too old with two high wages at the moment. So swapping with Dybala, that is actually probably 5 or 6 years less and basically the same wage, might be a good move. I think that the only thing that needs to be understood in case of Dybala will join Inter is how he can develop the relationship, the pitch relationship with Lautaro. Because, there are two different players, of course, yes, but for some controversy that they have are the same. So it's difficult to understand if these two players can be played good together. But of course, if you this is probably way too ahead on your question, because if your question is, are you in favor of Inter trying for Dybala, my answer is obviously yes, I'm in favor.
Let's close on Lukaku, and boy, could we do a whole podcast on Lukaku, because I'd be fascinated to get your take on a ton of things. Now, I remember, because I always look at your Twitter account when a big story comes out, your initial reaction was that Lukaku was talking like a player that eventually is going to sign with Juventus. So I have to ask you if you still feel that way. I'd say initially I kind of took it that way, and then I don't feel that way at all anymore. And do you expect him to be back at Inter, let's say, within 2024?
No, I don't expect that. I don't expect that because, we talk about Perisic earlier in this podcast, and we saw, and you actually made a good point when you say that the second time for a player at the same team is never going to be good. And I think this is the same, and I think that Inter found a way to go without Lukaku, even though we know now that Inter wants to keep Lukaku. So I don't think I'm going to see an Inter. And that thing was some kind of provocation or whatever you can call. Yeah, but I actually think that it won't be say no, because he understood now that Premier League is way too competitive for him. I mean, he can stand in the Premier League, but it's one average player there.
Yeah.
Right? It's not Salah. It's not Momo Salah. It's different. So you understood that actually in Serie A, he made a mark, and it might be the best player, right? So if there's another team in, apart from Inter that is prepared to saddle with them, like in wages and in project and so on and so forth, I think that Lukaku won't be problematic for him to settle for a rival team. I mean, the question is, can Juventus afford Lukaku right now? I don't think so.
Well, I'll tell you, if you thought that interview that he gave to Sky while at Chelsea was something else, imagine him giving an interview after joining Juve talking about his love for Inter. That would really be something. I'll tell you my theory, and I hate being playing psychologist on people. I think Lukaku is one of those people that wants everyone to like him, and he really thought, oh, Inter fans are going to really like me after this interview, and then really think things through. But a fool, I can't thank you enough. As always, really, really great stuff. It's always wonderful talking calcio with you, and I look forward to doing it again the rest of the year. For those of you, you know, that speak Italian, follow Fulvio on Twitter. He's got a lot of great stuff. Also on the pots at the draw, always really great stuff. So thank you so much for doing this, my friend. I love that we're bringing your perspective in English to people that normally wouldn't hear it. And thanks so much for the great work.
Thank you, David. It was a pleasure being here. And, you know, whenever you want to invite me, I will be here very gladly.